James chapter 1, if you'll stand with you, find your place, James 1. Let's start reading there in verse number 1. Started this a couple weeks ago, and I didn't plan on it being this spread out, but we're back in it again tonight. James chapter 1, it says in verse number 1, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which were scattered abroad, greeting. My brethren, count all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. Let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. So we started this book of James a couple weeks ago, and when it started, I didn't plan on taking 2 weeks in between the messages, but here we are tonight. I'm going to try to get back into it tonight, the first chapter, and see what we can learn from it. Excuse me, I got a piece of mint in my mouth. I can't talk. Let me get that out of there. I had a chaw at the back in my lip trying to spit it out. You don't want to spit on the front pew, Brother Rick, and put your safety glasses on. Anyway, we looked at this book of James. I gave you an introduction to the book of James. We looked at the person of James and the family of James, the doubt of James, the conversion of James, and the position of James. And I warned you, this book is going to get down to the details of our Christian life, Christian faith. James is Christianity, and overall, is what I said last time. An older preacher came up with that, not me. It's the workhorse book. It does the dirty work. It warns of those nasty sins and temptations, those trials that nobody else likes to talk about. James is the one that talks about them. And so, convicting book. It'll get underneath your skin at times and talk about things that you don't want anybody to know about. Tonight, we're going to really start into the book and looking at verses 2 through 8. I plan on going 2 through 16, but there's a lot more in here than I'll be able to cover. Start there in verse number 2 through 8 and look at the Christian and his battles. I'm going to divide this first passage up into two different parts. See the testings of the Christian life and the temptations of the Christian life. We're not going to get to the second part tonight. The first part, these testings. The second verse here, it says, my brethren, count all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. Now, that word temptation, where in our King James Bible was written, could mean more than what it means today. A lot of people get that confused. Even 1828, in Webster's dictionary, he gives a few definitions and examples. I'm going to give you what Webster's definition for temptation. The act of tempting, enticing to evil by arguments, by flattery, by the offer of some real or apparent good. Well, that don't sound like anything the Lord would do. Let's continue on. When the devil had ended all the temptations, he departed from him for a season. Luke 4:13 is what Webster has in his dictionary. Number one, definition for temptation, he mentions is solicitation of the passions, enticements to evil proceeding from the prospect of pleasure or advantage. Number two, Webster mentions the state of being tempted or enticed to evil, when by human weakness you are led into temptation, resort to prayer for relief. Again, does not sound like anything the Lord would do to you. Webster goes on. Number three, a trial. Lead us not into temptation. Number four, that which is presented to the mind as an inducement to evil. Dare to be great without a guilty crown. View it and lay the bright temptation down, is what Webster says. Number five, Webster continues, in colloquial language, an allurement to anything indifferent or even good. So in this passage of Scripture, we know that God is not going to tempt us to do anything evil. But this verse here, this word temptation, has a sense of the third definition Webster gives, which means a trial. King James Bible is not wrong. We should need to study our English language a little bit better. If you look up the Greek word here, it means a putting to proof. It's temptation, verse 2, it means a test, a trial, a putting to proof. Webster calls it a trial. Now we have that out of the way. This temptation there, it is a temptation. We just don't use temptation the same way today as they did in when they wrote King James Bible. Anyway, number one, we see the testings of the Christian faith. We see the temptations there. James talking about their testings, their trials of the Christian life. James tells, verse number 2, my brethren, count all joy. Why would we count a test or a trial as joy? Because they have a purpose. What purpose do they have? That's what I'm going to try to cover tonight. What could possibly be the reason God would allow us to go through trials and testings? What good can come out of a trial? Why would God allow us to do that? Number one, is a purpose. The purpose is, number one, for our enlargement. Many times the purpose of a trial is to enlarge us. They broaden our horizons, give us more faith than we had before. Trials will do a lot of things. One thing is for sure, they'll get you out of your ruts you're in. They'll make you change your path, change up your path. An old preacher said, there's nothing in ruts but mud and dead animals. And why would you want to be in there thinking about it with that stuff? We're prone to get stuck in ruts. In our daily task, in our human nature, we come to our church services, we go to work, we do our chores, we end the week. Next week we start over, do the same thing over again, complacent. We get stuck in ruts. And this trials a lot of times are purposed to enlarge us, to get us out of those ruts. Trials will get you out of ruts. They enlarge you, teach you more faith, more trust, more dependability on the Lord. James also says, he says in the same verse, divers temptations. That means temptations or trials of all sorts and sizes and shapes. Another word for that would be manifold trials, divers temptations. Multiple trials coming from every direction. You ever been there before? I imagine you probably have. And a trial, and oh, then this happens, and then that happens, and then this breaks, and then that breaks, and then this person gets mad, and that person gets mad at me. James says, count it all joy. Why should we count it joy? Because it'll move us. It'll give us moving. It'll enlarge us. Not only give us moving, but it'll mellow us. Not only move us, but mellow us. Teach us patience. Next verse, James goes on, verse number 3. Knowing this, the trying your faith worketh patience. The P word that none of us like to mention, that patience. The trying of your faith worketh patience. Your trials will bring patience. Why should you count all joy? Why should you count joy when you're in a trial? Because when you're done, you will learn some patience, whether you want it or not. If you're in the trial, you're going to learn some patience. That stings just saying, I don't like to learn patience. I don't know about you. I don't like to go through trials and learn patience. Again, none of us like having patience. None of us like learning patience. We want to have it, but we don't want to learn it. We don't like to talk about that. I told you James was to get down to down where we live, where we don't want to talk about. The Lord doesn't send us into trials just for the fun of it. He put there for a reason. Put there for a reason for us to learn something, to enlarge us. Oftentimes that reason is to teach us to learn some patience. God expects us to endure our trials cheerfully. That's tough. That's easy preaching, hard living. You say, preacher, that's impossible. You understand what I'm going through. You may be right. I do not understand what you're going through. I may not understand, but God knows what you're going through. Don't forget about the Apostle Paul. He's beaten to a pulp and thrown into a dark, dirty, nasty cell. They were tortured. They were put in stocks. Paul and Silas in the darkness began to sing. Not just hum a tune either. They sang so powerfully. Not only were the rest of the prisoners stuck around to hear what they had to sing about. Their cells were open. They could have left. They could have fled in the freedom. They stuck around to see what else they were going to sing. They sang powerfully. Not only that, but the jailer and his entire family ended up getting saved because of their testimony, because of their singing. They had joy in the midst of their trial. I may not understand all you're going through. I don't know if anybody here has been tortured or put in stocks and imprisoned for preaching the gospel. Not only are they used to mellow us, you teach us patience. Testings are there to enlarge us and by maturing us. Verse number 4. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. Now, we're perfect there, as mentioned twice. Both times it means to be complete. It means to be complete in growth, moral and mental character growth, of full age, mature, perfect. These testings, these trials, we can count them all joy because they will enlarge us by moving us, they will enlarge us by mellowing us, and they will enlarge us by maturing us. Sometimes trials are just there to teach us to count on Him. The more times you're required to count on Him, the easier it will be to count on Him. The more times you sit in a chair, the more faith you have to sit in that chair again. The more times you shoot a gun, I was going to point Zor out tonight, he's not here. The more times you shoot a gun, the more confident you get, the more mature you get with that gun, you feel more confident. You mature, you learn, you're experienced. You can count your trials for joy because God is teaching you and you're maturing as a Christian. You're learning what it means to have faith, learning what it means to use your faith, put your faith to work. Patience is something we don't like, something we don't like to learn, but something that is godly. God is a patient and a long-suffering God. God does not have to get in a hurry. He's outside of time. He has all the time in the world. He has more time than's in the world. The world we live in is a fast pace. We know that life we live in is a fast pace. The faster we can get something, the better. Down south, now you order something on Amazon, you can have it within 2 hours, depending on where it's at. We live in a world that everything needs to be faster. Get it to me now. With God, there is no rush. He has time. God has never been in a hurry. Doesn't have to be. Oftentimes, if we are in trials, we will want God to do something now. What I pray for this trial in 5 minutes ago, what are you waiting for? Going through trials will teach you to wait on God. It'll mature you. James says, count it all joy. It's going to teach you to grow, teach you patience, teach you to mature, teach you to wait on me. Number one, not only enlarge us. Number two, it'll give us enlightenment. James teaches here that these trials can count them joy not only for our enlargement, but for our enlightenment. We can learn more. They will teach us. Verse number 5, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given of him. If any of you lack wisdom, have you ever been there before? I know I have. Still am most days. You're in the midst of a trial or storm, and you just do not understand what's going on and what God's trying to teach you. Lord, I do not understand why this is going on. I do not understand why I'm going through this trial. You ever been there before? We talked about that some Sunday night. James says, do any of you lack wisdom? Do you not understand? Do you need wisdom to understand why you're in the position you're in? James gives us a solution. If you don't know, James says, if you lack wisdom, let him ask God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not. James says, do you lack wisdom? Do you not understand? And he says, then ask for it. It's pretty simple. Just ask God for it. Follow Job's example. Oh, it wasn't until Job's friends had all gotten done tearing him apart, and he had spent some time cursing the day he was born, and God began to speak. God gave Job some wisdom. Job didn't come out of that trial better than he went into it. If you need understanding, if you need wisdom, if you need help, James says, just ask for it. We've been trying to teach this to Josie. She'll get all worked up and over nonsense, over nothing. She's trying to put a shirt on over her head, and she gets her big head stuck in the shirt, and she can't get her head through, or she can't get her arm out, and she'll lose her mind and start crying and pitching a fit. And we go in there, Josie, why are you crying? Why are you freaking out? I tell her all the time, if you need help, just ask for it. We point fingers at her. We do the same thing in our grown-up Christian life. Well, I don't understand. Why is this happening to me? I can't get my head through the shirt hole. Why is it not working? James says, just ask for it. If you don't understand, you have wisdom, ask for it. Why can we understand that in her case when it comes to our own life? We can't figure it out. James says, ask for it. We need wisdom, ask for it. He also says, and upbraideth not. That upbraideth means just what you're thinking. It means to not rail at or to chide at, to taunt, to reproach, to make fun of. James said, just ask the Lord for help. He'll give it to you. He's not going to make fun of you for not knowing. When I was younger in school, wherever I didn't understand something, I would try to, instead of asking for help, I'd try to figure it out myself because I'm hard-headed and independent like that. I don't want other people knowing that I didn't know how to do such and such. I was afraid others would make fun of me for the fact I didn't know. James says, just ask the Lord for wisdom. He's not going to make fun of you. He upbraideth not. He's not going to poke fun at you. It's the Lord. Just ask him for help. Now he's been trying to teach Samuel some on the piano. I think y'all probably saw some of that. So when he started that, if he messes up, it's okay to mess up. He doesn't know everything. If he doesn't understand something, ask for help. We're not going to make fun of him because he's learning. The Lord's the same way. That's what James is telling us here. He's not there to poke fun of us when we don't understand. He's not there to, if you need wisdom, just ask God for it. There's no reason to be embarrassed before God for not knowing the last part of that verse 5. And it shall be given him. If you're truly looking for wisdom, if you truly ask him for it, it shall be given. He's not going to keep it from you. If you truly ask for help, he will give it to you. The Lord's not going to, if you want to know, in your heart of hearts, you truly want to know, you want help, you want to have wisdom, the Lord's not going to keep it from you. That's what James says. The scripture most likely contains the answer to the exact problem you have. We have the answer book here. Sometimes it's hard to find. Ask the Lord for help. He'll give you wisdom. He'll teach you. Read the answer. Young Samuel in the temple, he said, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. I need the same attitude. Lord, I'm listening. I need some wisdom. Help me, Lord. I don't know what to do. I don't understand. Lord, I need some help. I need some wisdom. James says, you just ask. God will give it. And what does that first verse of verse 6 say? First word. But. God will give you whatever wisdom you ask for. And James places some rules in there. James swings the door of prayer open, and he pulls it back and says, but wait a minute. In verse 6 through 8, he gives us some verses or some rules of this thing of receiving wisdom. What is that he tells us? James starts in verse 6. Let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. Hebrews 11:1 says, now faith is substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. But without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. If you're going to come to God and ask for wisdom, you best be coming and asking in faith. Hebrews says, if you come to God, you must believe that he is who he says he is, and that he is the reward of them diligently seek him, and he is going to give you the answer. James says, if you're going to want this wisdom, God will give it to you, but you better come with faith, asking in faith, believing he can do it, believing in him. If you need an example of someone who needed wisdom and faith at the same time, look at Moses. God appeared to Moses in a burning bush in the middle of a desert and told him that he wanted to lead a million or more Jews out of captivity from if not one, if not the most, but one of the most powerful leaders in the world at that time. Out of a bush came this command. Over and over again with Pharaoh, God told Moses, God gave Moses faith, taught him faith and patience. He was in diverse temptations with those plagues in Egypt. He learned to trust in God. His patience became perfect. He learned to trust in God. And then when they got to the Red Sea, Moses didn't have to worry about it. Exodus 14:12 says, "Is not this the word that he did tell thee in Egypt, saying, Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." And Moses said to the people, "Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, you shall not see them again, no more, forever." Moses had faith and had asked the Lord about it. He knew the Lord was going to carry him through the Red Sea. The Israelites said, "Moses, you brought us out here to be killed in the desert." Moses says, "The Egyptians you saw today, you're not ever going to see them again. You can count on that. Lord will take care of it." Moses learned patience. How did he learn patience? How did he learn faith? Through the trials he's put through. He asked for wisdom. If you ask for wisdom, there no God can give it to you. Moses didn't know how to get over the Red Sea, but he has faith, knows God has a solution. Before this time, Moses didn't know how God would split the sea. After this, he knew how God would split the sea. Before the wilderness, Moses didn't know how God would turn a bitter water drinkable. We learned in faith and asking, learned wisdom. Then Moses didn't know how he would give water to all those Jews who were thirsty in the dry desert from a rock. Went through the trial. God gave him wisdom. God taught him faith. God showed him how it would happen. God does not always give you the wisdom you need before the trial comes. God did not write out there at the burning bush. Didn't give Moses a whole list of commands of how he's going to go through every trial he's ever going to go through. He didn't tell him how to get water out of a rock. He didn't tell him how to make bitter water pure there at the burning bush. It wasn't until the trial came that he gave him the wisdom. When I was saved, God didn't tell me, "You're going to end up in Craig, Alaska, pastoring your church." And if he did, I'll probably say, "Lord, you're crazy. I'm going to go somewhere else to church." He didn't do that. He saved me, and then later on he called me to preach, and later on he burdened my heart about the mission field or going somewhere else besides where I was. He burdened me about Alaska, and he burdened me about Southeast Alaska, and so on and so forth. I found out about y'all. God oftentimes does not give us wisdom before we need it. You have to ask in faith. Nothing wavering, James says, believing that he has an answer and he'll give it to you. James says nothing wavering, just asking faith, not questioning, true childlike faith that God can and God will answer it. He says in the rest of that verse, "For he that wavers is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed." I know you're all familiar with the uncertainty of the sea around here. A wave comes up and it may go down over there, it may go down over there, your boat may go over there, your boat may go over there, and you go over there, then your puke's going to go over there. At least mine isn't. If you're in a boat and the waves are rolling, there's no telling where you're going to end up. James says, compares a man to that. There's a lot of people like that. They go into a trial and they cry out for God to help, for help. Then they go to this person for help, and they go to that person for help, and they go to this organization, that organization, and then the liquor store for help. James says, if you want faith, don't be like a wave of the sea, tossed to and fro. Don't waver. Be calm. Have faith that God will answer. Have patience. Wait for the answer to come. Verse number 7, "Let not that man think that he shall receive anything from the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Let not that man think he shall receive anything." The man that is tossed like a wave, tossed here and there, a man that can't make up his mind, James says, a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. What is that, a double-minded man? What does that mean? A man that can't make up his mind. One second he's living godly. The next he's out sinning with his buddies. One Sunday he's under conviction in the pew about getting saved. The next Sunday he's sleeping in the pew. As a sense of a man at a bus stop, had read somebody give his illustration. The bus pulls up and man wants to get on and he keeps putting it off and standing back and let everybody else go. And he wants to get on and he goes back. He can't make up his mind. Eventually the bus is going to pull off. He's going to be left there. A double-minded man can't decide. And by his undeciding, he makes a decision. The bus is gone. Same way with many people today. "Oh, I want to live for the Lord, but I'm still holding on to this. And I want to do this for, I want to have wisdom. I want to be faithful. I want to be patient, wait on the Lord. Oh, but I still want to do this over here. I still want to figure it out on my own. I'm going through a trial. I want that wisdom. Oh, but I still want to be part of this thing over here. Still not quite sure which way to go." James says, if you're unstable, if you're wavering, you're not going to receive anything of the Lord. You're unstable in everything. If you can't make up your mind who you're serving, yourself or God, James says, you're unstable in all your ways. Can't decide on that. You can't decide on anything. The Lord's not going to give you an answer as long as you're unstable. James says, you want to answer the Lord, be faithful, be patient, wait for it, and stand firm on what you believe in. The Bible doesn't give us an opportunity to waver back and forth. There is no halfway position. The Bible tells us to choose. Joshua 24:15, if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served on the other side of the flood or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, you will serve the Lord. Elijah said there on the mountain, choose you this day whom you will serve, either Baal or God. Either Baal, who choose you this day who you serve. Don't be double-minded. Don't be unstable. Choose who you're going to serve. It's important. Without it, you're not going to receive wisdom. Go through a trial. If you're not faithful, if you're not stable, you're not going to receive the wisdom to get through the trial. James has a lot to say here. A lot. Why should we go through a trial and count all joy? Because there's a lot we can learn. Learn patience, receive wisdom. The wisdom doesn't come without the trial a lot of times. Before I put all this on paper, like I said, I thought I would go a lot further tonight. I'm going to stop there at verse number 8. James says you can count all joy and go through trials because they're for a purpose. They're there to enlarge you, to teach you patience and faith. They're there to enlighten you, teach you wisdom, how to receive wisdom. Next time I'm going to look further how these trials are for our emboldenment and therefore our profit. Some may say, I just don't understand how such a gracious God will allow me to go through these trials. Well, it may not make sense to us on the outside. God's doing a whole lot of work behind the scenes that we don't even realize. That's what James is trying to teach us here. The trials aren't a waste. They're not for no reason. They're there for a purpose. They're there for our profit. They're there to teach us. What can you learn from your trials? What you should be asking going through a trial, not, Lord, when is it over? Lord, what can I learn? I know that's easy to say, hard to live. James has a lot to teach us. Count all joy. What a challenge. Count your trials as joy for the Lord. Let's pray. Lord, thank you this day. Lord, thank you this people here. Lord, I pray of this simple thought. Lord, thank you, James, here. Lord, pray of us to learn from it and see what we can learn from you. Lord, I pray of us in our trials. Lord, let us be faithful, to be patient, and learn from wisdom, Lord. And thank you for your forgiveness in Jesus' name.